All right, if you please find a seat.
Thank you.
Let's go.
Got one?
Two hours.
I don't know.
Gavel us.
Hey, gavel you?
All right, the board is now reconvened, and, we'll move into our general agenda items for tonight. And, Mr. Manager, you're gonna treat this first item, which is a general agenda item, not normally open for comment, but we're going to have discussion, on this resolution, and, you might give us some ground rules there.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we are, we will obviously, I think, treat this like a public hearing item. I do have three individuals who have signed up to speak for this particular item. It is the first item under your general agenda. It will be 262-08. It's a resolution for signatory authority. This is for the acquisition of real property in Kane Road in the Three Chop District. We'll have a presentation by Mr. Sandy Cherry, legal counsel for Henrico County, who has been handling this particular item. Then, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that you open it up for public comments from those individuals who wish to speak, and of course, any discussion that the Board of Supervisors may have. It's a little unique in the aspect that it is a general agenda item, but obviously there is a need for information, which the Board has requested that we provide, and we are prepared to do so. So, Mr. Cherry, would you come forward, sir?
Mr. Manager, I might say that the board has been dealing with this piece of property for almost over 18 months now, and it's been a controversial piece of property in many respects, but it still is considered a very important and strategic piece of property in the orderly development of the West End. And we've had studies done and charges made, and the Land Use Commission has studied this piece of property, and we want to do everything we can to make this process as open and transparent as we can so the public understands the decisions we're trying to make on this land. And that's why we want to have this public discussion tonight with a little bit of background and where we've been and how we've gotten to where we are. So with that, that's just a little bit of background.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Manager, members of the board, the manager said, my name is Sandy Cherry. I'm with the firm of Randolph Board Cherry and Vaughn, and I'm assisting as outside counsel in the county's effort to acquire the Kane Road property if it chooses to do so. Let me explain as a preface that I am not here to suggest what I think the value of this property is. I am not a real estate appraiser. My name is not at the bottom of any appraisal in the Commonwealth. I work with appraisers on almost a daily basis and have done so for 36 years. I may think I know something about appraising, probably think I know more than I actually know, but I am not here to suggest that I have a value for you that you should consider, because I'm not an appraiser. I'm not here to address the issues of public use and public necessity. Those are essential policy questions for this board to consider before it purchases any property for public use or before it commences condemnation. I can say without equivocation that I am utterly convinced that the staff in this instance has studied this property very thoroughly with the assistance of J.K. Timmons to determine that it can be used for the proposed purposes and that all of the property would be necessary for the proposed purposes. And those are public school, park, fire station, fuel station, and possibly a water storage facility. So it serves five separate public needs. Probably the only instance in my career where a parcel has served that many different public uses all at the same time. I'm also not here to recommend a process to resolve this matter. You've been through that ad nauseum. You have adopted a process. You have gone through a land commission. you have followed the new policies that you have adopted for properties that are in excess of $1 million. You've obtained 2 MAI appraisals. You've had those appraisals reviewed. You've even gone the further step of going through a voluntary mediation process with the mediator listed as the number one mediator in the state of Virginia, John O'Brien, and you've been through that process. The next step is no longer an election in terms of do we go this way or do we go that way. You either are going to proceed to acquire the property voluntarily, or you must go through the condemnation process. There are no other steps that you need to consider in the process. Now, as Mr. Hazlett mentioned, and Mr. Keckley mentioned, this process now goes back for, I think, 18 months or so. I'm relatively late to this matter, and that gives me a disadvantage somewhat because I'm not exactly sure of what's gone on before. I read the Times-Dispatch. I'm not a citizen of Henrico. I live in Richmond, but that's about all I know about what's gone on before is what's in the paper. It gives me an advantage in that I have some degree of objectivity about looking at the at this potential condemnation case, and that's really what I'm here to do. It's not to value the property. It's not to recommend the process. It's here to discuss the settlement value of a potential condemnation case, because if you don't buy it voluntarily, that's what you must do. And I'm here to recommend a figure that has been offered by the owners of the property, and that figure is $24.4 million. That figure was not arrived at during the mediation process. The parties went back and forth over a full day and did not reach an agreement. Any agreement reached at a mediation would have been subject to the board approval, but the figures were quite far apart at the end of the day and in the mediation that was conducted on August the 20th. My recollection is that the owners indicated they would, even if $25 million was on the table, they wouldn't accept it, and the county manager made clear it wasn't going to be on the table at the end of the day. After that, the parties continued to talk, and the owners have now made an offer of $24.4 million. It's been put in the form of a contract that is in a perfectly acceptable form for presentation to the board. Mr. Rapisarda has gone over it carefully. Now, I've got a couple of slides. If somebody could help me with the first slide.
We're going to help you, Mr. Chair. You should be able just to look at that. Fred?
The other slide is really the first slide. Thank you. This looks a little peculiar because the names of the appraisers do not appear by the figures, and that's for a reason. The landowner agreed to exchange written appraisals for the purpose of negotiating and then for the purpose of the mediation. However, the appraisals were exchanged really on the basis of the terms of the mediation, which called for confidentiality. In a condemnation setting, the landowner does not need to turn over his written appraisals. It's a peculiar rule in condemnation, but the condemnor must give the owner the appraisal report that forms the basis of its bona fide offer, but the landowner does not need to reciprocate. So the understanding is that we have, through counsel, is that we would not reveal the names of the appraisers in public at this point, and I'm going to try to honor that. This is difficult for me because I know all these appraisers very well. I've known them for years. All those numbers represent a face to me, and hopefully I won't slip and substitute the name for a number. I can say regarding all four of the appraisers in this case, that they're all licensed general appraisers, that they are all local Richmond appraisers who are well known in the appraisal community. All four have qualified as expert witnesses before in various circuit courts, including Henrico. And all four are NAIs. That means they're members of the Appraisal Institute, which is the highest professional designation that an appraiser can receive. Now, if we could go back to the first slide, please. Well, I'll go through these figures very quickly with you. For the county, we have two appraisals. They're close together, as you can see. One at $19,500,000, the second at $20 million. And those are the per acre prices that correspond. I've used the acreage of 205.321 acres. For some reason, the appraisers have not agreed precisely on the acreage. They're very close, and I've chosen to use the figure used by appraiser number two for the county. The difference in the acreage is in the hundredths of an acre and is insignificant. The landowners' appraisers are at $28,735,000, which is $140,000 an acre, and the highest is at $30 million. The $30 million translates to $146,000 an acre overall, but that particular appraiser didn't apply a uniform per acre value to the entire 205 acres. He carved out a 16 to 18 acre tract, which he called North Gaten Road frontage, and gave that a much, much higher per acre value. That gave his overall value shot it up to $146,000, but he's really about $530,000 an acre for that area that he carved out. The offer under consideration is $24,400,000, which translates to just under $119,000 an acre. Now, it's important to remember that if we go to condemnation, neither side is restricted to these appraisers or to these reports. Effectively, the county will be required to use appraisal number two as the basis of its bona fide offer, because you will want to proceed quickly, and that has been approved for negotiation by the review appraiser. But neither side is restricted to these appraisers. They could hire other appraisers. My guess is that the landowners might well do that. So you might see higher figures as we go into litigation. These reports do not go into evidence, but the appraisers testify during the case, and the jury doesn't review an appraisal report. It listens to testimony. These appraisers are significantly far apart on the value of the land, as you can see, but they agree on some basic tenets. One is that only the comparable sales method is appropriate. There are two other methods of valuing property, the income method and the cost approach. No appraisers use those. They've all used comparable sales, which is to say they've gone out and looked at sales on the open market that they think are similar to the subject property, made adjustments if they thought appropriate, and came up with a value. They all basically agree on what's called the highest and best use of the property, and that's a critical decision in every appraisal. All really agree that the highest and best use of the property is holding for development in the future. Appraiser number two, for instance, the county's appraisal, believes that the holding period would be based upon several events. One would be the completion of North Gaten Road. two would be the final adoption of the 2026 land use plan. Those are critical events that would occur in the future. And three is infrastructure, sewer and water. Now, water will come with North Gayton Road, as you're aware. Sewer would be at the expense of the developer. This has resulted in something that's unusual for this type of case, and that is that they've all used the same sales. Some have used more than others, some have used fewer than others, but they've all used the same set of sales. Their difference is in the adjustments or the lack of adjustments. Usually when you see differences of opinion of this magnitude, it's because they have a different highest and best use of the property, and therefore they're using entirely different set of sales. One appraiser is using commercial sales, the other is using residential sales. That's not the case here.
Actually, the Mr. difference Jerry, I read the reports, and they did use, there were several differences in the properties that they used. So I hope you will go over that. And that's one of the things that made the big difference.
Well, I didn't express it correctly. The universe of sales is 12 or so sales. Out of those 12 sales, our appraisers have used 10 and 12. Their appraisers have used 3 or 4 of those same set of sales. That's what I'm trying to say. They didn't use the same 12 sales by any means. You're correct. They picked and chose the correct the sales that they thought were most comparable. Now, if we could move on to the next slide. Thank you. In cases of this nature, it is the inclination of the jury, we used to call them commissioners, to split the baby somewhere. We can't tell you exactly where that's going to occur. If we could, we'd be in a different business. But based upon experience, I can tell you some formulas that are used in cases that are of this nature. One is splitting the difference between the high and the low appraisals. That comes up with a figure of $24,750,000, which is a little over $120,000 an acre. Another is a quotient award. A quotient award is an illegal award, but it's done because it can't be policed. A quotient award is just adding all the appraisals together and dividing by four. Another approach in a case of this nature where there are a lot of sales is for the commissioners, and that comes up with a value that's fairly close to that $24,558,000. $119,000 an acre. Another possible way to look at it would be for a jury to simply average the 12 residential sales with no adjustments. The reason I put no adjustments in there is, unfortunately, that's a simple methodology which is easier for them to understand. It is more difficult for a jury to grasp the need to finely adjust individual sales for differences in utilities and topography than it is for them to just seize on the actual per acre price of that sale. And that is an inclination, particularly if there are a lot of sales in play, and there are a good many sales in play here, and there are 12 residential sales. Now, I have thrown out the sales that were at 500 plus thousand an acre. As you may recall, those of you who have looked at the appraisal, appraiser number four, who is from the landowner's list of appraisers, used sales on West Broad Street to compare to 16 to 18 acres of the subject property. I think that is so off the wall and totally inappropriate that we should be able to convince a jury that that's improper. And so I've thrown out those sales altogether. Another way of approaching it is number four, and that's really just choosing the middle sale. There are an equal number of sales on each side of that figure. Because there were 12 sales altogether, I had to do a little adjusting because there's no true median middle sale. But that is the median figure per acre, $128,756 per acre. If you just take those four averages and average them together, you come up with $24,931,638, which is a little over $121,000 an acre. And the last line shows you the proposed offer. Now, I would suggest for your consideration that a jury might do any of those or a combination of those. I would look at it a little differently myself, I think. I would, based on the information that we have right now, which will not be the same information we have if we get to trial, we'll have different information. We may have other appraisers. We may have more information. We may have better information. But based on the information that we have right now, I would suggest that the best award that we could anticipate would be if the jury would take their low appraisal and both of our appraisers and add them together and simply throw out number four altogether. The $30 million gets thrown out. Why do I say that? That's an award which a jury could view as a victory for the county because it averages two of your appraisals against one of theirs. And it renders a figure of $22,745,000. I think that is the best that we could anticipate under the best of circumstances. Now, what's the highest that we could anticipate? Hard to say based on the information that we have to date, but I would anticipate somewhere around $27 million. I think we're good enough to convince them to come in less than their low appraisal. But they're going to give it consideration. The midpoint between those two extremes is $24.9 million, which again leads me to the same conclusion that a settlement in the range of $24.4 million is an excellent settlement. Now, factors that need to be considered. I can't stress this enough. We've got a jury, not a commission. For over 30 years, I tried these cases with commissioners where both sides got to name people who were familiar with real estate values. Oftentimes, the result turned on who got the three commissioners as opposed to who got two commissioners. But at least they were people who knew something about real estate values, who understood the appraisal process, who knew what an easement was, who knew what fee simple meant, who sometimes thought they knew property values better than the appraisers, and occasionally they did. We're not going to get that in this case. We're going to get a jury. And, ironically, we're going to get a jury that has never read an article about this matter, because they weren't interested enough to read an article about this matter. All those people will be stricken. We'll get a jury of folks who are not familiar with real estate and who weren't interested enough in this civic matter to read about it in the paper, because if they read enough about it, they will be stricken for cause. I think we're fortunate to be in a community that has educated jurors, conservative jurors, but it's an unpredictable group that we're going to have. We're going to have auto mechanics, we're going to have housewives, we're going to have every conceivable. We'll probably have a lot of retired folks because they are able to sit on juries of 4 days, and this is going to be at least a 4-day trial. All that simply means is it's less predictable than a result of a commission would be. Now, another thing that I want to really credit John O'Brien with this thought. He was the mediator, and we talked about this just the other day, and he communicated this to me, which I think addresses a question I think, Mr. Glover, you've had, and that is this. We've got a policy now in the county, and we got the two appraisals, and they came in close together, and we have confidence in those appraisals. What do I tell my constituents about why we offer higher than the appraisals? If you could adopt a policy that could compel, legislate, that to be the result, I would support it 100% because I think the more common sense appraisers are one and two. Now, I have a bias. I usually represent the condemning authority. I know these people. I know one. I have a lot of confidence in one of them in particular. But that's my bias. If you had the power to legislate that, that would be wonderful. But you don't. You can't legislate it. It's not within your power to do so because the owner won't accept the figure. What happens then? We go to condemnation. In condemnation, the decision is thrown to a completely different body. The owner doesn't make the decision. The court doesn't make the decision. The board doesn't make the decision. I don't make the decision. Mr. Hazlett doesn't make the decision. Five disinterested freeholders in the community, that simply means their only criteria is they must own land, will make that decision based upon the evidence presented. And the evidence presented here will be four appraisals, two of which are much higher than yours. They cannot ignore testimony that is presented to them. They're instructed not to ignore it. They will consider it. I've carefully considered whether I can strike those appraisals altogether. I think they get into evidence. Number four has a number of flaws to it. Those flaws will be corrected prior to trial. They have very competent counsel, and they will address those flaws, and they will be corrected. So they will get into evidence. The question then is the extent to which they will influence the jury. It's no longer, as I said, what is the value of the land? It's what is the value of that case. Now, another thing to remember about the process of a voluntary acquisition is that you do avoid any risk of a challenge on public use, public necessity, bona fide offer, all of the jurisdictional prerequisites. Would there be a serious challenge here? I think you've built a strong case for public necessity and public use. I think you've done careful planning in that regard, but I cannot guarantee you that they're not going to be challenged. Increasingly, those are challenged. In a voluntary acquisition, there's no challenge, obviously. Finally, you do avoid the expense of litigation. You avoid having to pay outside counsel. You avoid having to pay experts. We had a case recently in James City County, you've heard me refer to it before, where the spread of the evidence was considerable, but we're dealing with much smaller figures than here. County at $400,000 and the landowner at $4.3 million. The landowner's counsel hired 14 expert witnesses. Land use experts, environmental experts, gravel experts, goes on and on and on. Do I anticipate that we'd have 14 here? No, but I didn't anticipate we'd have 14 there. So expert witnesses and consultants, court reporter fees, jury fees, all of that would be saved. And finally, sort of an intangible, it's hard to put a dollar figure on, is the amount of county staff time that would be required to be devoted to this condemnation case. This county will assist me considerably. I know, because I worked years ago, I worked with Henrico in several cases way back in the 80s, and they will provide that assistance, but it takes a great deal of time and energy out of their resources. For all those reasons, I believe that a settlement at $24.4 million, which is in the neighborhood of the $119,000, $118,000 to $119,000 an acre, is an excellent settlement, and I would recommend, I believe the county attorney and county manager joined me in recommending that it be accepted. I'd be glad to entertain any questions.
I'm sure there are a number of questions, even though we've been over this several times, but I'll start out by asking one. And you mentioned the mediation process. Are the numbers that were discussed in that process, can they be used in the condemnation case? Is that available? Is that public record?
No, all of that is confidential and cannot be used in the condemnation case.
But you also, you know where you and the county manager and county attorney represented us during this mediation. You know where we were at our highest offer and where they were at their lowest offer.
Yes.
And I don't know if you can tell us those numbers, but how does this
I'm looking for help on whether I can publicly discuss those numbers. We do have a confidentiality agreement within the mediation.
Mr. Chairman, I, as much as I hate to say it, I'm not at all comfortable with revealing that.
Well, I'm not asking you to do it if you're not comfortable with it, but I would like to know, though, within the range of those 2 points, where this 24.5 is. And
let me see if I can...
And you can...
I can dance around it enough to...
Good.
To adhere to the confidentiality agreement. I have already said, I hope I didn't violate it by saying that they indicated they would not accept a $25 million figure.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
We indicated that it would a $25 million figure would not be forthcoming. I did not say where the two parties ended up, but they the $24.4 million is obviously between the two extremes, where the county went to and where the owner went to at the end of the mediation. It is considerably less than the owner's last demand at the mediation.
Well, that's part of the basis for your decision to recommend this.
That's part of it.
But you said the mediation broke down.
It did.
So how can we have a contract in front of us?
Well, after the mediation, the parties kept talking. And, Ms. O'Bannon, this happens with some degree of frequency. Mediations usually are concentrated to a period of time of you know, one day, no matter what the case. It's a one-day mediation. And the parties do almost invariably move closer together than they were before. And sometimes things get heated. They got a little heated during these discussions at one time. I think we parted on a cordial basis, but it was vigorous discussions during the mediation. But at the end of the day, a figure had not been agreed upon. But I think after that, the owner instituted the phone call to Mr. Hazlett to resume discussions.
And this is what I'm very disappointed in. Done mediations before, and I understand that process certainly, but about 18 months ago, I went to the manager with the concurrence of Mr. Thornton and gave him a letter. He set up the independent commission as was requested in the letter. They went through a tremendous amount of time working on how this process should be handled.